evacuation.
There we go. Now we're recording.
Okay, let us, can we, I'm gonna write down, we're gonna note that it, the intent was that it was going to be on this month's agenda, but then I didn't have an opportunity to follow up with information with the school, so I was gonna postpone it till September, which I still intend to do. So our future agenda item will be on the school, and then I would like your help in framing that agenda item for next month, and you do.
I don't think I've used the right word, but I just inadvertently, I'm talking about evacuation.
Okay, oh, you're.
Specifically evacuation.
Okay. Okay, so I'm gonna do, I'm jumping into my future agenda item. There's a lot to, I think, to talk about the school, so I don't think limiting it to evacuation is, I mean, we can talk about other things as well, but
Yeah, this is the most important.
In particular, evacuation is key, and then some topics that I can bring to the table. Okay. Any other public comments?
Hi, my name is Sophie Bordicki. I'm just a member of the public. I live near the school. And I was actually calling about the school. It sounds like you're going to have a deeper discussion about it next month. Did I understand that correctly? Are you having trouble hearing me?
I didn't hear about half of that.
Okay, hold on. Let me get the headphones off and I'll just talk into the phone and take the video off. One second.
Sorry, I heard about half that.
Well, where is it?
Can you hear me better now?
Where is it now?
Are you there, Sophie?
Can you hear me better now? I apologize. Okay,
no,
yeah. Sorry about that. So I was calling in about the school. I actually sent an email about it earlier, and it sounds like you're going to have a deeper discussion about it next month. So I'm wondering if I should call in about that next month
well,
and
I
not
think,
take up time now.
Well, you can have your public comment, and then that'll kind of help us focus the content of that agenda item as well.
Oh, okay, great. So I live on 99 Highland. I sent an email this morning to the public comment email inbox. And my concern is around evacuation. And then especially with the red flag days where Kenyon Avenue will not have parking on it. I just wanted to state, assuming I'm understanding that correctly, what I read in published in, I guess, in the newspaper, I'm in favor of that. I worry a lot about evacuation living on 99 Highland in a fire situation. And I'm just concerned about the management of traffic with the loss of parking. And then also, you know, the control around the number of cars, you know, up in that area on red flag days, and how the school could, I don't know about the school, but how that could be better managed on high fire risk days. That was really what I wanted to sort of bring up. Is that being discussed? Are there thoughts around that? I have some thoughts, but I'm not really an expert in emergency preparedness. So I don't know how useful my suggestions would be.
No, your concerns are shared by those on this committee as well. A lot. And I appreciate the comment. Are you aware that the school does close on extreme hazard or particularly dangerous situation days as well?
Does a red flag day include that? Or
no, it doesn't. It's kind of like a subset of red flag days. If you have a red flag day, but if the conditions are more extreme, then they'll actually close the school, which would help that situation, which is
Sophie, that would help.
Paul Moss speaking. You might want to check page 17 of the school plan, the Kensington Elementary School Plan. It's a 100-page document. You don't have to wade through all of it. I can tell you right away.
Okay.
Jim and I talked about it. It's page 17, maybe 18. It'll give you the conditions.
Okay, here's the conditions.
We need to get that to her. So.
And, you know, even if it's just a high risk day, I could just say, having lived on that street for 14 years, that I get very concerned. And I'll definitely want to look at that. But, you know, there's hundreds of cars that come up, often take up all the parking, you know, and I just, as well as all the staff, it's just a tremendous amount of cars. There's a lot of elderly people who live on 99 Highland. And even with the, you know, changes on Kenyon, I worry about gridlock and not being able to get out if, you know, all the parents are there and there's a fire.
Yeah.
Those are one of my big concerns. I'm sorry?
One of the options.
Yep.
I'm in support of this, but it isn't the final word, is that parents wouldn't go up to the school to get their kids. That will create a ridiculous situation beyond anything we've seen before if they try to do it. But another option is to get them out of there, which would be difficult, and march them down this road behind the right up here behind the school and comes down to this area where the community center. It's a tenth of a mile. I measured it.
Yep.
It is downhill and makes it pretty easy. And that's one possibility. And to get them out of there so that the congestion that you're talking about doesn't occur, at least in that area. Maybe
yeah.
Somewhere else, but not there. Get them out of there.
Okay. So this is the type of topic that this is what I'd love to talk about for September.
Okay. All right. You know, and I'm happy to table it. I don't want to take a lot of time. I just wanted to express some concerns, and I'd also offer some ideas maybe when you talk to the school. One idea I had was on a red flag day, there's no residents only parking. So one of my concerns is that the school has events. You know, an example would be like the Halloween Day Parade. And I know that this is like not a high probability, but it's not outside of the realm of probability that a fire, you know, there's lots of human activity. It's really dry. It's really hot. A fire happens by the school and there's like 300 cars, you know, 400 adults and 500 children, plus all the staff up there. And they're all trying to get in their cars and get out of there. So one of my thoughts is it's on days like that, it's, you know, resident only parking. That just the, you know, people who don't have a business reason to be there aren't up there. You know, some thoughts like that. Anyway, okay. I don't want to take up a whole lot of time, but that was one, you know, idea I had that could maybe reduce the volume of cars up there on high risk days. But you know, I'm not an expert in emergency preparedness or how realistic that really is.
Okay. No, but I'm glad you actually, came to our meeting today.
Okay. But I'm happy to table it. I don't want to take a lot of time. I can come back in September if that makes more sense. Let me know if I'm taking up too much time. Okay.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Okay.
And thank you. And I wrote down.
And then, yeah, if you can send me that document, I'd be happy to read the section about the criteria or any other documentation you'd like me to read to prepare for September.
And Sophie, I think I have your email.
You do, yeah.
Same one, because I'm on
yes.
Highland too. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll get.
Okay. Well, thank you. I want to say thank you to everybody for letting me speak now, and also for all that you're doing to make us safer for fire. It is something that's a grave concern for me, and I really support everything you're doing. And just want to tell everybody I appreciate you.
Awesome. Thank you. Sophie.
Okay. I'll drop off now then. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Okay. Any last public comment before we move on? Nope. Okay. All right, public comment is closed. Adoption of consent items. We need to have a motion for the approval of the minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Okay, moved by Annette, seconded by Katie. All in favor? Oh, we have to do it by roll call. Because you're public, so we don't have to do it by roll call.
Okay.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Passes. Next, old business, none, new business. Okay, work plan progress update. Can we put this to, or is there not a video
I think she.
Oh, you turned it off. Okay, because I keep staring at myself and this is just not.
At the bottom where it says video.
The camera rotates.
Yeah. No, the camera will rotate when it turns on, I think. Yeah. At the bottom over where it says video. Danielle.
Left, yeah.
Yeah. If you click that or see where it's got a slash on it, just click it.
Just to the left a little bit more?
Yeah, go left a little bit more.
There.
Yeah, now click. There we go.
Okay. Update on the work plan progress. It is anyone, Johnny, were you going to take this or were you going to go somewhere else?
No, I can go over this briefly. Is there anything on the first item that the general manager has an update on? I know that the last time I think we spoke, the signs were being posted on the corridor, Westminster, Kenyon, and Purdue. Was there anything else that the general manager had to update on that?
David? The signs are all in, and we're ready to roll when the next red flag day comes up to actually put it in action.
Okay, cool. And for the grant tier, for the hazardous vegetation removal grant, we just set a meeting with myself and the general manager and Mary to discuss the future of the hazardous vegetation removal grant program, that the proposed refinements that we brought to the EPC. So we're going to discuss that on Monday. The current funding period, we're about 80% complete of the applicants that were approved have already submitted their reimbursements. So we're about 80% done on those in this period. The KEEP program, I touched base with Wildfire Defense. Sorry, was there a comment?
Oh, sorry, I was coughing.
Okay. Bless you. So the update on the KEEP program, the first set of applicants are being fabricated. So I'm expecting a ship date soon. That's all I know right now. So I'll be touching base with the people who have filed for their mesh, and I'll be... And once I get a ship date, I'll start coordinating the distribution with those individuals. What's next? Coordination of vegetation removal programs. Oh, I just saw, David, do you want to talk about this? I just saw that email from you to John Joya about Sunset. Do you want to touch on that one?
Yeah, because so much of the vegetation in Kensington that is considered to be a fire hazard and dangerous is on county property. And I think everyone in the group knows that. I believe besides myself, some of the others have been a bit frustrated with Public Works and trying to get some action going on some cooperation and getting some of this vegetation removed. So I reached out to the supervisor. That'll be part of our discussion with Johnny and Mary on Monday. And then I will get back to the supervisor to have a coordinated discussion with him on him trying to push Public Works to some degree on getting some of this vegetation handled.
Cool. Any questions about that? Okay.
Do you have a specific area that you're aiming for aside from Sunset, or are you just focusing on Sunset?
No, I use Sunset as an example of my frustration in not getting a response from Public Works, or more importantly, not getting anything done by Public Works. But my thought process and what I'll be talking to Johnny about is us gathering some key locations that we can present to the supervisor that he can then kind of push Public Works on.
Okay. Is it worth, Johnny, I'm sure you have places in mind because you have the ear of the community and probably hear everyone's complaints about vegetation everywhere. you
Yeah, it's just been so very nebulous in the community about where the county's responsibility begins and the residents starts. It's always been really nebulous where that is. There have been times when I'm doing the hazardous vegetation grant, like last year, there was a tree that on it was one of the applicants was the application was rescinded because the tree was then removed by the county. So I don't understand why if there is vegetation in the same similar situation between the sidewalk and the street. Is that also the county's responsibility, or is it like a patchwork of responsibility of within the same type of placement between the sidewalk and the street? So that's always been a big nebulous definition to me, but it would be really helpful to know if that's the situation, then why don't we just target all those areas?
Jim has something to say.
Yes. The county owns the right of way on the street. They also own the right of way that extends from the street to and include the sidewalk. So typically, for example, on Purdue, you have a street that is about 20 feet wide, and on either side, you will have about, oh, roughly 5 to 6 feet of landscaped area, which is owned by the county, and a sidewalk, which is owned by the county. It is the property owner's responsibility to maintain that landscape strip, but it is county property.
And then not all roads have sidewalks, and Sunset being like the most
And
egregious case.
the homeowner has to maintain the sidewalk, but it is county property.
So I've seen some of the regulations of the county requirements for like maintenance, but it is, I agree, it's very ambiguous as to who's in charge of what. I mean, because we walked it with the county, but for Purdue,
Well,
but
and because of the location of that landscape strip that is owned by the county, it is always at a distance that is, I think, without exception, more than 5 feet from the actual home itself. So it's not an area that will be subjected to significant reduction in landscaping.
yeah. The other thing that he told us too was that part of the reason why that sidewalk was part county was because you had utility easements over it, I thought.
Could be the case.
So that's something that complicates the situation as well. So maybe that is getting some definitions might be part of your agenda. I have a public comment on this particular topic.
Well, my question is, since every road serves as an evacuation route in Kensington, wouldn't the vegetation necessarily be an issue that had to be dealt with? I thought that there was actually 10 feet from the edge of the road that was supposed to be cleared of any kind of hazardous vegetation that would impede evacuation. So my question is, could that be presented to the county in that way and therefore be dealt with?
Is that part of Zone 1? Do you know?
No,
It's either.
it's not zone. It's the property. The zones end at the property line.
Okay.
So if the sidewalk is not part of the property, it's not part of any kind of home zones. But evacuation groups have their own issues, and in fact, I think it's a state regulation. The minimum state regulation is quite. Where Berkeley has taken an extreme position on that, and they're actually clearing it on places like Grizzly Peak into the homeowner's property. I'm not sure where the state regulations begin and end, but it would be something to look into.
Okay. Did you get that, Johnny and David?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. And so moving on.
Okay, so supporting FireWise leadership development, I have two areas that are not recognized FireWise that I'm working on right now. One, Rodney had asked, if I could do a Zoom presentation. So we're trying to get some people together to attend a Zoom presentation with me to discuss developing a Firewise community on his street or in area near Calusa Circle. And the other one is just west of the Arlington around the Norwood section of the community, just south of Rincon Firewise. So that was a new development yesterday. Some residents that own property in Kensington are going to be moving back to the community and they want to engage their area. And they have been asking for Firewise recognition. So I talked with them at length yesterday about the developments of that and the, you know, how we can further implement a lot of our programs that we've created through Firewise and connecting their new neighbors that have recently moved into where they own the house that they're moving in. So they're excited to come back and engage with all the new residents that have moved into their area. So that's on top of that, we are going to be doing Firewise recognition renewal applications soon in October, November. So I'm going to be working with all of the Firewise communities that are up for renewal and working with those leads to submit their renewal applications because that's done on an annual basis. LRAD is, oh, is there any questions on that?
You just go ahead.
Yeah, oh, hold on.
I'm here.
Yes.
That topic. I'm the only person that signed up to help.
Or Firewise. Okay.
Yes, so I want to say so. Okay, I've talked at the last two meetings, told you about a pilot program that I initiated, and it's just for South Lake because that's where I live and I know the people. And I said that we were going to both go around to every single house in that neighborhood, talk to the people and give them some handouts. And I didn't bring copies of it. We are now at 72% of people have been contacted. We aren't getting any negative feedback. In fact, all of it's been positive except for one person who insists she knows everything already. So we don't bother with her. And one out of, at that point, is about 16 houses. I'm not worried about them. This is what we gave them. I'm sorry, maybe I should have brought it. Maybe you're not interested, but I did bring what the package, so to speak, that we gave them. If this first page is a bunch of questions, none of which are going to be unique to anybody here. You've heard all this stuff, but I wanted to keep it real short and real simple. What's that old phrase? Keep it simple, stupid. That's what I'm going by. So we've asked them and we checked with them. We talked to them. I've spent an average of about 30 plus minutes talking to each person, keeping it just to this. It's all about evacuation this time. I'm not diminishing any other concerns. That's not what I want to focus on because to me, the most important thing is getting people out of here and saving their assets. Okay. And so instead of having a survey as this form is, we just talked to them about it. Then I gave them this piece of paper. I also then, with regard to notification, which I think is right up there with evacuation, it's part of it. We tell them how they can register for each of these four items, the county warning system and NICSL. Red flag alert is something that I think is lacking a little bit. That's Johnny's thing. And I've given them the website, talk to them, make sure they understand this is Kensington's red flag alert notification system. And I really am fond of Watch Duty. I think that is an excellent way of self-educating about what's going on at any given time with regard to any given welfare, because these first responders and the people that staff it are really on top of stuff. It's very impressive. And my guess is the fire situation in the state even right now would be a lot worse without that function and that crew. And then I gave them a map. You've seen on the, and I'll tell you why I laminated it. This is right out of the KPOA directory. Mm-hmm. We took the map, kept all the junk out of it that we didn't need. We put the upper footpaths, by that I mean the paths that are above the Arlington, because that's where this group lives. I mean, somebody can take this and do anything they want with it. I chose to just pen in because I couldn't get the computer to do it for me without spending days on it. So I penned it in red, and those are the footpaths that lead out of Upper Kensington. Mm-hmm. On the back of it, it tells them again for they probably have seen this 100 times, but now it's 101. The what is recommended, and it's condensed down from different groups, what are some of the essentials they should have, and maybe some suggestions of other things, and they can do anything they want with this. I don't care. I mean, the idea is to make them realize there are some essentials. Medications for most people are something you just don't want to overlook, because I have personal experience with that in the Paradise Fire years ago. People didn't have those with it, and they come up to you during the intake and they tell you, yeah, I take something for my high blood pressure. What is it? I don't know, but it's pink and it's small and it's round. Really? And we're supposed to go get it from them? You get it for them? No, we can't do that. Nobody can. Yeah. So that's a big deal. But and these other things, I don't really care if somebody doesn't have a rimmed hat. We just thought it was a good idea, among others. And then optional suggestions. And at the bottom, we put emergency radio stations, six of them, all that are well-known emergency radio stations. So if they're driving in their car and they're concerned, or one station is out because the situation at hand is a real mess, they here's a list of stations you can get. Why did I laminate it? So that they would just throw it away, and they would have a little respect for that some work went into it. And the idea is we tell them, please take this thing and put it in your go bag.
Or glove box.
Yeah, some just have it with you. And so go bag to me makes sense. You have the thing, this thing can go back. It's not going to hurt it. It can get wet, make a difference. And why give Kensington residents a map of something they probably know all about? Because I find that they don't. I was a volunteer fireman back in the 80s in Kensington. I used to know all these streets. Ask me now. I don't remember all these little streets, you know. And I get screwed up every now and then down there. I admit it. Okay. And my guess is other people have just as serious or worse problems. And then there's the mission where, okay, Joe Blow's lived next door to me for 30 years, but there's this fire and he panics easily. He's having trouble with his eyesight. He's really concerned, and it's happening at night. And maybe he even had a couple drinks that night. A map goes a long way in my mind. And it's not hard. It's right out of the KPOA. Just for the heck of it, I'll show you something. I'll pass this around if you can see it. This map needs a correction. It's really odd when I first looked at it carefully. The southern part of Yale Avenue coming off of Beloit is missing. They just didn't draw it in there. If you didn't know those streets going down to Young's Market from Grizzly Peak Boulevard, for example, you wouldn't find your way using this, because the street is completely missing, and it's the one that goes off Beloit. It's that I penned it in on the ones I gave my neighbors in black, so you can't tell, and that one is there.
The path?
No, that's the path. Okay. This part I penned in where it says Yale. There's a yellow going across. So, oh, see, this one doesn't have it. That's what I want to show you. See that line? It's not Princeton. Princeton's this line. The southernmost, or I guess it's the southernmost part of southern eastern of Yale is missing on the map. So I told the head of the KPA to be aware of that and maybe change it before they hand out another directory next year. I just feel, so what's the goal here? The goal is to do this pilot study to see if one, and I almost could guarantee it from the beginning, one-on-one consultation or conversation with neighbors and people works. It's better than anything else, because you get people to listen, because you're in their face. You're right there. Mm-hmm. I told you I had one person that was not easy to deal with. Never really did get through to her, because she knows everything. But that's one so far, and I think it's going to be the only one out of 30 some homes. And the idea is that if FireWise would maybe look at this effort as maybe, and I'm not sure, I mean, sure can be improved on as a model, so that the FireWise leaders take their lieutenants and people working with them and ask them to do the same thing, where nobody has to maybe go to more than, say, 10 homes. That's all I have to go to, because I have two other people working with me, they're both the plot captains. And we worked together, we came up with some ideas, put this thing together, and they're going around to an equal number of homes. Inefficient, you bet. Grossly inefficient. I can't think of any worse way of doing it in terms of efficiency, but in terms of getting the job done, it's working.
I really love your map.
I think it's excellent.
I think the lamination is the real, the kicker there. It gives it a its own, you know, sense of grandeur, like, don't grow me.
Yeah, don't grow me. That was, yeah.
Grandeur is not the right word, but, you know, gravitas, or whatever.
So that's the effort.
Okay. Johnny, did you get that?
Yeah. The next one. The next one is the LRADs. Which, are we skipping that?
Number six.
I don't have any update for LRADs, and, you know, yeah, Katie, I'm going to have to call you. We'll get on it.
Okay.
But that is still staying on, because that is, I need that on there to support us to continue doing it. Lori, also, Katie, do you want to say something? Are you sure? Look.
I'm not sure if it fits into LRAD, but one of the issues that I would love to see dealt with is the inefficiency of the cell towers. There's like blackout Kensington, and I think it's going to be an incredible crisis. So I know LRADs are about getting the word out when there's no power and there's no way to get signals from CWS, but somehow we need to deal with this even before we have an evacuation, because I'm afraid that, or an actual evacuation order, because what I'm afraid of is that we're not going to get the message when the time comes on our cell phones. And here we're telling everybody, as Paul has done, here's what you do. You know, plug into watch duty. Well, watch duty's not going to be available if we don't have a signal. So.
Yeah, do we nail that?
Pardon?
Do we nail that? We yes, we
so I knew it was related. I just there's yeah. I'd love to see it extend to the cell towers, maybe all having backup batteries in the highest hazard zones, or the I don't know where you would draw the line, but somehow to
yeah, and the phone company was talking about 10 years ago. They were saying we're going to do that.
Yeah. Somebody should call.
Yeah.
Cell phones have been on the topic of the EPC even when I remember pre-COVID. For COVID, when I was not even on the EPC.
Yeah, we've been one of the put on these micro things on, and it was at the moms, oh, I'm going to get cancer. And then that was at that time, that was AT&T was talking about the backup batteries. This was back then, too. That was like a distraction.
Oh.
You know, but yeah, I'm saying that's what they were going to do that. And we thought, okay, so then it's instead of what, but I still have something. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a whole bit right.
Annette, and then I have another comment.
Yeah, oh, first of all, I think that the cell towers do have backup batteries, but the signal strength depends on which carrier. I know that where we are, Verizon just doesn't exist.
Right.
But AT&T is just fine, and so is T-Mobile. Mm.
I'd also bring up that one of the solutions that they've done in, and this again is a Firewise link-in, but in Marin, they have actually issued either block captains or Firewise leads, I can't remember which, they've actually issued satellite, you know, cell phones to these key positions, so that they actually, so someone in every area has the ability to connect, no matter what.
Yeah, we thought about that.
Oh, you did?
Well, with Caro Echo to try to figure out how to talk to first responders.
Right.
But first of all, they're very expensive. You have to maintain the subscription. And if you give them only to one person in each area, you're assuming that person is available and tradable.
Sure.
Which might be a heroic assumption.
Maybe CERT. I mean, maybe the solution is CERT. So because they're on call during these emergency situations.
Mm-hmm. But somebody has to be able to get to that phone.
Yeah.
And right. Yeah. And somebody has to be on the other end of the phone.
So maybe we can look up. I mean, LRADs for. Yeah, they're kind of a topic. The cell phone issue has always been an issue. And I don't know, maybe we can look into contacting AT&T and Verizon or whatever. In the, like, because if we can get polls in, then that goes to dovetail with LRADs or I don't know. I feel helpless with this topic in terms of increasing the cell phone coverage in our community.
The cell phone coverage in Kensington since the day they first started having cell phones has been a problem, and it still is. People just live in dead areas.
It improved a lot.
Across the street and they're yelling because there's one little spot across the street that they can get some act. And they're yelling on the phone. I'm like, what is get the net and throw it over this car. It's the only place I can get any service.
It used to be a problem, but they improved it a lot, except I know where we are, Horizon doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's a lot of places still.
Okay, so, well, Kenny, you and I can talk again. Move forward on it, but it's still on there.
Yeah, it's done if we connect.
We have to connect.
Well,
we will. Johnny. Red flag.
Back to me. Okay, so, the red flag distribution plan, the K did a great job of pointing out which sites we should focus on for the number of flags that we have now. And it was clear to me that we may need to print some vinyl banners to put on the cyclone fence on the median and at the school area and at the library. As a different type of format that we can use to inform residents and give them a better understanding of where they can get additional information, because that is not on the flags. So it's an additional device that we would use this program. So I'm going to mock that up and bring it to the general manager for procurement that we can use with this program. So I'm going to continue building out this program. The next phase of this is where we're going to store the flags, because they're currently behind you in one of the closets. And we're going to try to look at metal cases that can be outside and just locked with a combination lock. So it's a lot easier to access than inside of getting into a room and then getting into a closet within that room with the key. So it'd be nice to have it a little bit more accessible to some volunteers. And then I have to build out that deployment protocol and the training program and then recruit volunteers. So with watch duty, were there any questions to that?
No, you're good.
No.
Wait,
okay. So with watch duty, I am going to have a presentation and have watch duty do a presentation on their app, which I'm putting together now. I just got confirmation of their availability. So I'm going to continue working on that, finalizing that for September, like a weekday evening Zoom presentation that anyone in Kensington can Zoom into. And they'll cover the app, they'll cover its functions and the benefits and doing demonstrations. So walking people through the Watch Duty app would be great. Especially it's going to be great for them to present their own product. So more to come on that, and that's coming shortly. So just, you know, in the next couple of weeks. So look out for that. I think it's going to be a really great presentation, and hopefully we can, you know, do that maybe like once or twice a year at least, which I think would be good. Any questions on that?
Johnny, that is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Will you record it?
It can be recorded.
Yeah, you might consider.
So I'll work on that.
But I am excited to hear that. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Earthquake preparedness. So I'm trying to wrap up all these other things that we have in progress before I dive into this new stuff. I want to make sure we're accomplishing the things that we have already set forward, but it's on the radar. As you all know, we have that preliminary information that went out for the evacuation drill. And then I think some of that information is going to tie into CERT and earthquake preparedness. So there's kind of moving pieces with CERT, the organization coming into its development and foundation. So there's just kind of things just kind of coming along before I can just plug away at some of the stuff. So that's earthquake preparedness. Well, we have identified that we need to do individual household earthquake preparedness, and then block level community-wide preparedness as well. So more to come on that. Any questions?
You know, how does that dovetail into the chief, what the chief wrote to Gail in terms of priorities for an evacuation route?
I thought that was a really good letter focusing on, you know, and that was, that's been a conversation that I've been having with some other folks too. Because when I've experienced getting an evacuation order, there's always this conceptual idea of what you're going to do when it happens. But when it actually happens to you, you kind of start second guessing what it was. And a lot of the times people don't know they're getting that alert. So we've done a really good job in Kensington and at getting people registered for CWS. What we have to do is get them plugged into the devices or the portals like Watch Duty and Sufficient at Watch Duty so they can even get more advanced information early on before CWS is activated. So does that make sense, everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Any comments? Oh,
with regard to that letter.
Oh,
where is it? Keith Johnson mentioned the letter from.
I know, and I actually asked the question, but well, let's just do it because it's an agenda item. But if you guys don't mind, let's just.
Well, you brought it up.
I did.
Okay.
No, I'm not telling you. No, I'm just like.
So in short, Paul, the chief's recommendation was focusing on alerts and communications right. And receiving the alerts and communications. So that's just what it was.
I read it, and I think it's great, and I hope that more people read it now. Because we've been talking about that, and I've been talking in that vein such that I can honestly sit here and tell you that there's nothing in that letter that we didn't bring up before with regard to the problems with trying to act like an evacuation drill, the kind that was held before, will shed any real holistic light on a better way to do things, except for choke points and a few things like that, which were revealed, but I honestly believe they could have been recognized in a tabletop exercise as well. And all of that is what Orinda and other districts have realized for the last half dozen years. And that's why they don't conduct them. Richmond, I understand, did recently. But the ones that were always in the newspaper and having these big drills, they don't do them anymore. And reasons exactly what the chief says and exactly what was brought to this committee in the past multiple times. So I hope that the fact that the chief wrote it this time, I hope it's distributed to you know, maybe just anybody who starts talking about evacuation drills and wondering what's happening, like the head of the APUA did, they see that since they didn't listen to us.
No, I don't recall receiving that particular letter. That doesn't sit in my head.
No, it was just in the lot packet. It wasn't it, Johnny? I don't know. Was it distributed anywhere else? That's it.
I didn't get that one, but I was wondering.
It was posted. Public on the website.
I thought I got it.
Yeah, it was part of the packet, but that's okay.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. It was.
So,
how many people look at that?
So, isn't it what I was? Because I had been thinking that, you know, people are talking about evacuation drills, and I was thinking that perhaps. Because then what the chief is saying now may just poo-poo my whole idea that we take it, we would go and then like the ECK005 or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. on the district and have evacuation drills, each one of those separately and distinct from the others, because each one of those had their own topography and their own choke points and their own, you know, difficulties that they have to deal with. So just each one could have an evacuation drill, just concentrating on that area. End up telling you to be on the
side of
mine.
It's still a very limited population and it's staged. In other words, they know it's coming. They know if they volunteer to do it. And those are the people that already know what to do.
Okay, but given that, yeah. Okay, it's staged and well, then what do we do? Nothing and just say, oh, no. It's going to be better when it's real.
No, the chief puts in his letter to their alternative. And it's about notification.
It also totally depends on what direction you have to go. And so the evacuation choke points are going to be very different depending on
the situation.
I know, so, but everything's going to, you can't really practice for anything because in a real life situation, it's not going, you're not going to be exactly where you were.
Exactly.
So then what do you do? Okay. Nothing?
Okay.
Wait.
Laura,
So in the chief's letter, the one thing that he definitely speaks towards is identifying what is the most important or pertinent information we want to pull out of our proposed drill. And again, not a full parade drill like Paul was talking about, something that might be more tabletops, different aspects that we can explore and go through and make sure that when it comes to the real case scenario, we have that information in hand so we can help direct people. So I think doing a huge drill also, yes, it doesn't make sense. Both the fire chief and the police chief agreed on a lot of those concepts, and those are our technical experts.
Okay.
And we really need to like listen to them on some point. But let me finish, please. There is, you know, lessons learned. And he even said lessons learned from several different other communities that went through a disaster and have similar, you know, topography as we do, certain demographics that we do that we can learn and take from and like already pre-implement in a way as well. Part of that is the vegetation stuff that we're already working on, Red Flag Day. But yeah, if we can drill down further into it, it sounds like he's not poo-pooing the idea of going through the process. He just wants to know what information we're looking for. We can't just put a broad net out and say, we need to find out everything, because that's not helpful and it isn't a good allocation of resources.
So given that, with the chief or, you know, whoever he would use for his staff anyway, would they put together a tabletop drill? And in that tabletop drill, not just say, okay, there's a fire coming in such and such direction, and then the temperature and the time of day is such and such, you know, that kind. I mean, aside from all that, and also throw in other things that can go wrong. So we're doing a cascading disaster, because that's what we're going to have.
We could look into that, but I think
that'd be great.
We're not asking them to drill, like to put the tabletop together. I think this is something that our committee could actually like kind of formulate and pull that information together and ask. So, you know, maybe we should take some initiative in this process and see what we can like bring to the table, and then ask what to consider from those technical experts.
Well, I would ask that the chief and the fire people start the tabletop drill well going, because if they give us some parameters to work with, then we can add on to it. We can add in things that can go wrong.
I think it needs to be the reverse. I think we need to find out.
Let's do it that way. Let's do something.
Yes, do something. Yes.
Berkeley did that study looking at whether Berkeley can evacuate from the ridge, and it would take hours. I think that a first step might be talking with Berkeley and learning what they learned, because I think it's very comparable. I think the situation is very comparable to Berkeley's situation.
There's I think there was a take-home message from Matt, and it was very simple, early, period. That was the only real clear
before
lesson to remember.
Before.
Yes, and then, well, and that's it. And you know, the one thing you'll hear back about that, because I've tried that elsewhere, I've mentioned it, I mean, well, what if everybody leaves early? Then you have the same problem. Yeah, but the fire's not licking your ass yet. You still have some time. And I'm going to tell a quick story, but I have a couple who live in a place near Grass Valley, Nevada City, in the Sierra foothills. It's called Lake Wildwood. It's a big community. About 3 or 4 years ago, they had a fire there. It encroached on the area, and it looked like the winds were going to carry it right in to this community of thousands of people. It's like a little Ross. Okay. And it turned out the fire didn't get in. But my friend, he is seriously disabled. He has a cerebral spinal syndrome that makes he's sharp as hell, but he can't, doesn't have any coordination. Okay. So he's in a wheelchair, and they don't do things without thinking about it a little bit first, because it's such a pain to get him out, especially when you start talking about rushing. So they waited 15, 20 minutes, is what I understand from them. And then they went to get out. It took them an hour and 15 minutes to drive 1 mile to the edge of this community.
And okay, that's now. Smaller.
Because of traffic?
Huh? Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, clearly because of traffic in the community. Because, I'm sorry, I didn't mention, it's a little bit like Paradise was in 2018 with limited egress and access, it's about four roads. And that's of all they have. Lake Wildwood has less. Okay, so they took them that long to get out. Now, everybody survived, everybody's homes were intact and so forth. And they went back, started talking to their neighbors about what happened. And there were neighbors that as soon as they got the alert, they got off their high knees and they left. I mean, right away, within minutes. Took them 15 minutes to drive the same distance.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to what you're saying, communication is one of the areas that we should look into. And that's exactly what the chief said.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we can tabletop.
Talking about
that. Or do like a question exploration group, right? That's a good step.
Yeah.
If people are leaving when they pre-evacuating, there is no ignition, but the weather warrants it. They're not going to all leave at the same time. And so it's likely that it's going to be a reasonable evacuation.
Yeah, I got accused once when I brought up this business to it at a board meeting as a member of the public about early evacuation. And it was pointed out by the then fire chief that I was essentially fear mongering. And I said, yeah, well, I think I am, but at least I'm spreading the fear out.
Yeah.
Where everybody doesn't leave at once when the flames are in your face.
You need to know the fear.
And I think that's what you meant, isn't it? That it would be diluted.
It would be diluted, number one. Number two, you need to know to have the fear.
Yeah, so not everybody will leave early, no matter what.
You
could tell them anything, and a lot of people will still stick their ground and go and pick up their garden hose and try to fight the fire. There are always people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, bless them, actually. It makes it easier for me to get out.
Or walk out.
Yeah.
There
oh, well. Yeah. Okay. Was that your final comment?
No.
Okay.
I wanted to actually make another comment, which is one of the things that we did with Grizzly was we took people and asked them to simply act like at 10 o'clock, they got the evacuation, urgent evacuation to leave immediately. And time yourself to see how long it takes for you to gather your pets, gather your children, gather all your belongings, and get it in the car. Because a lot of the pre-evacuation steps that you want to take are loading up your car while you're waiting instead of waiting until the last minute. Because I think a lot of people are under the impression that I just have that go bag, or I just have those few boxes, or I know where my keys are at all times.
So what would the end result?
Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting exercise that people can do with their family to kind of educate their family and not really have to be keyed into anything.
Did you do that?
Well, I've done it in another area. We didn't do it.
What was the
my own time, I couldn't get my cats in my carrier.
That's great. Wait, so that you learn.
They can set your attention.
Not that you're going to be in the carrier. I'm going to pause this conversation really quick, and I'm going to go back to Johnny so that we can just finish up this agenda item with the last update on CERT, and then we'll go back to the other end of that.
I attended the last CERT organizational meeting, or the steering committee meeting, which was very productive. And Laura, do you want to talk about the upcoming activity?
Okay, yeah. So yes, I think the last meeting was very productive. We're still establishing a lot. We have, like I said, a website ready to go. We have some other things kind of in place. The EIN was filed. We're still working the rest of the paperwork because it's kind of a snail run. We decided to do we have several trainings coming up right in October for CERT.
Mm.
We're establishing another Stop the Bleed probably into the new year because the holiday season's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to do a social event, kind of, but a two-tiered informational and social event. And we decided on Go Bag Bingo. So it's what you really need in your bag.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing it October 6th. Johnny's already, I believe, booked the space for it here at the community center. We're asking people to bring their go bags. We want to see what you got. It's family friendly. It's kind of like a show and tell. So we're going to do like bingo cards, talk about the things, lift it up, look at it. It's a way to trade information and also like see what the latest coolest gear is that's actually needed. Some people have some really antiquated stuff in their bags, and we want to make sure that, you know, they understand it's a bag you have to carry. It's not all your household stuff. And that it is, you know, important, much like medications lists and other information that maybe you don't have access to because the cell towers are down or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're talking about October 6th, 6:30 p.m. here at the Kensington Community Center.
October 6th,
6:30. 6:30. So that's a Tuesday evening. And then hopefully we get a lot of participation again and more people interested. Besides just having people trained, it's just about getting people vested in the volunteer work again, because we're still very bare bones. And I mean, we have a list of people from the 4th of July event and from the potluck event, but it's the same people that have been around that don't really participate as much. So we're hoping to get more activity around it, and hopefully they can start feel the community vibe again.
So. Look, you mentioned trainings that you were having. Are these trainings outside what the CERT course would teach? Is that
so? Stop the Bleed is outside the CERT course. So the CERT course is like happening this October, and I think we're at max capacity already. But you know, that's fabulous, right?
So these are other topics, but related to what CERT would do,
including, okay, like I believe we have a CPR training that's going on the 29th. Is that correct?
CPR.
Is that correct? Johnny and I'll have it in
CPR first aid, or just
looking for it.
CPR. If you contact the fire department, they have a sign up. So
Okay. So that's, and I believe it's pay for.
That's one of those extras, isn't
that? Is that the $49 one, Johnny?
Hold on. I'm trying to pull up the website for you. Oh, just okay. One second. Just keep going. Carry on while I do this.
Sorry, Johnny. I also don't have access. So yeah, there's a few other trainings that we're trying to coordinate so that people can get more training down. So when it comes time for actual activation, we'll have it together. And then another part of steps and the things that we've talked about was how we coordinate with communications and relays with Caro Echo, and how that works with the fire department. So that's another kind of step in the direction of our process, because I don't think, according to Chief Castron, he's saying that secondary part is kind of not fully developed yet.
That's an understatement.
So we need...
What's that?
Secondary part is, say there's a disaster, if we have efficient block leads, they're using their radios to talk to the area coordinators, which we don't have right now. We're still trying to get those pinned down. That person coordinates up through the EOC, or someone with HAM, right? Radio designation, and that goes to the county.
Through the EOC in one way or another, yeah.
And then once it gets to the county or whoever's coordinating that net, how does it get to the first responders? How do they know when we have more? And that's kind of where the I guess chain breaks a little bit.
It's a problem, and I've heard that it's not just us that have this problem, because somebody have to find a way to communicate with somebody who can communicate with the first responders. And you can't just use another radio, because there has to be somebody on that frequency listening to it. And that's probably not an efficient way to do it, that there aren't that many people around. And so, yeah, the idea that might work is to have HAM operators at dispatch and hand a piece of paper. So we have a standard FEMA form that we use.
The 213,
the 213. And hand that to somebody at dispatch to triage and communicate.
But all that needs to be worked out on the back end. We're still needing people.
We're not very close to getting that done. The new county fire chief, I understand that needs to go through county. That's what Sailors told me. And
yeah, so the CWS.
That they have, not CWS.
I have a question. I don't, Annette, you brought this up before, and you said that you talked to Sailors of our, if I miss speaker, tell me. But my understanding was that you talked to Sailors and Sailors told you to talk to the county, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I mean, I just can't think of how the county, if Sailors group won't help,
because
he expects the county?
Because it's dispatched, because they're dispatched to the county.
They only.
That in my 18 years of search and rescue experience, we deal with the sheriff's department, we deal with the county and everything, and there's no way when we're having a search that we let civilians get in the way. We can't. Okay, and they, if they. They can't be part of it even. We have a liaison officer, for example, to deal with the public. But I think trying to establish a direct link or.
It's not a direct link. It's just trying to figure out how to get the information to the first responders if there was like a major event that required their immediate attention.
And there needs to be somebody who can appropriately triage information coming in and decide what needs to be forwarded and what doesn't. I mean, obviously, Caro Echo has to be doing triage before we send things to that. But we're not talking directly with the first responders, and that's
why you need somebody in EOC. And what Berkeley does something like that, I've read about it. So why isn't Berkeley a model for that?
Apparently, Berkeley's having the same issues.
That's not really the.
I looked at their ham plans, and basically, it's to send information out to the neighborhoods, which is another important function of the system, of the net.
Yeah, it's relayed back. So
but
we need to know.
They're
what's
not talking about receiving information from the neighborhoods. They're only talking about sending information out. We want to be able to send information to the first responders, not directly. When I say that, I'm not talking about doing it directly. I'm talking about finding. Well, apparently, it's not likely that the EOC is going to be staffed directly.
So the location's down at City Hall in El Cerrito.
Yeah.
Who's going to hang out there all the time?
And the question is, who is?
The FBI. The FBI goes. They should. And those counties do. Those are the people that take that.
And we also have, of course, the problem that many of our people don't live locally.
What happened?
Big problem.
What happened to our old-fashioned chain of command when we had either like our CERT people or the radio operators, whether they're ham or communicating to the incident command, and the incident command communicates into OES.
Well, the problem is communicating with
technical change.
And Sailors does say, it goes to incident command, not to the EOC. Okay, how do we do that?
No, it goes to the incident commander. The incident commander, then that person has the incident commander has the information, and then they transfer it.
Yes. But is it a local or regional incident command? And that might
and,
be part
and
of
that's
the
why the EOC is kind of like that secondary part to that. And that's what
if the county staffs EOC for emergency drills, they have a person there that takes calls coming in from the public. It's filtered triage, if you want to call it that.
Contra Costa County staffs an EOC?
Yeah.
Big one in Martinez.
Yeah,
it's great. Been in it, I worked there. I mean, it's huge. It's newish. It's 3 years maybe now.
But going back to, I'm sorry to bring it back to CERT, because we want to get back on the agenda. We've been kind of.
Your boss's name would be very helpful.
I can give it to you. He didn't want to be bothered directly.
Oh, okay.
I'm telling you, even.
Paul always holds the names close.
He answered my questions about the problems between the CWS people and the sheriff's department. He works in the sheriff's department, and he gave me an answer. He said, it's in progress. And it was such a, I know this guy for 18 years, okay? And he said it in such a way, don't ask any more questions. Okay. So he's not the right person, no.
Oh, no, that's so sad.
He's really good. He's
let's get back on track. I'm sorry we took us way off topic a little bit, but just to finish up, CERT's still trying to establish a lot of the structural stuff that I think they might have, I don't know completely before, but the hope is to find more people who are willing to work on the radio side and be those block leaders, Paul, like your neighborhood block leaders, that we can like have the same standardized communication bar. So
it is true that the net is useful locally as well as getting information out to the first responders. It's a way to share resources locally. Yeah.
So I really appreciate Caro Echo's existence for that reason. Mm-hmm. Same with Firewise. I know we'll be partnering more in the future as well with CERT and being a stronger kind of like resilient community unit. So
great. And then do you have any more of the speeds of your update or the, and then we got up on the tracks. Any more things that you wanted to add to your updates?
Oh, no, just that was it for the search.
Great.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's not me. There's a committee. There's a bunch of people that do stuff. And Johnny is also
the energy
really
that
strong.
You have concentrated.
Oh, yes. I have a lot of energy, though.
Yeah.
It's just me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have any ex CERT people that are rejoining now? Just one.
We had one person, his name was Jeff, who's actually part of the steering committee now. He's been really active and excited and actually helping with the training in October. And we're slowly inching people back in. I think post-COVID, everyone's really reluctant. There's a lot of that feeling of I have a lot on my plate. I'm trying to get my stuff in order. What's there, and we're still building as we're swimming.
Okay.
Yeah, you kind of don't want to serve them until they're ready to eat.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so that covers the agenda item 5A, which is the work plan progress, and then now 5B is discussions on the evacuation doors and plans, which we already touched upon, but I did want to let's finish that discussion with a short, end part to it. So if you have any lasting comments on the evacuation drills and plans, anyone?
Oh.
Or did you get it all up? Any other ideas, any other comments, public comments?
I will say that at our next meeting, yes, I would like to prepare something in connection with the evacuation plan using out of the school.
Including, so not solely focused on school in general?
I can give you a list of the things that I think would be a good topic of discussion. I think it will be a lengthy discussion, too.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. And then, in fact, why don't you send me that list,
yeah,
and then you send me a list?
Yeah.
And then you can say,
well, I'll talk to Paul before I even send mine.
And then I can get that together and then we can create the
exactly
the topic.
Okay.
I have just something Jim said made clear. If we're going to be putting, concentration on that and the evacuation for the school, which of course we need to do that, rest of it. But with the parking situation up there and the number of cars that just have that don't live there necessarily, but they're there anyway, are we going to help address evacuation plans to those people who actually live there with their cars that don't have the right to live there? How the heck they're going to get out with all this other stuff going on? Because they're really put in a terrible position.
Are you referring to the people who cannot live next to the school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Sophie is
right about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what Sophie was worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she really is. Her driveway's right there.
But are we going to really address that? Or is that just something you listen to and say, we agree with you, Sophie? Or is that going to be?
Well, I would say if you have a specific idea that you want to bring up regarding that topic, email it me and then we'll have the list of things.
Yeah, I just don't know. We're just saying that we need to actively work on that and throw ideas out, or throw it out to the police, throw it out to the
changing my head for a reason. I think the school itself with 450 kids, the oldest of which is what, 13, maybe 12, mm-hmm, something like that. And the youngest, 5,
mm-hmm,
four.
And plus those
and four. The youngest is 4. There's TK there.
I say concentrate on my, okay, maybe I'm jumping ahead, but I would say concentrate on those people. The neighborhood people that live up there have their own issues about this whole thing. The only thing I would think that we could maybe look at, maybe jumping ahead here, it's just an option, is that if you can eliminate parents from going up there when there's evacuation and they get marched out somehow or taken out, and we don't have school buses or any, so we can't do it that way. That's what it's going to have to be on foot. Japan does this. That's from my wife just having been there and observed it. And a neighbor. Okay, and they do things like that. And then the neighborhood itself, I don't know, better, there's probably better words I could use, but basically takes care of themselves just like other neighborhoods. If you can at least give them some hope that that traffic up there will be way reduced if there is an evacuation plan. Because they would go down that back road right up here. Or walk down, yeah, well, I don't think we can incorporate. That's just my decision.
No, but I mean,
it's a problem, but it's a problem.
That we looked at and see, like,
who's the park? I just lead up.
Permit parking, me.
Oh, there's that. Go after her, man. I'll get out of the way.
Nothing can happen.
Do you think that's legit?
Is, yes, I think there's an issue.
There's a school, there's
some other problems too. One other issue you need to consider is that the kids may not be evacuating, they may be sheltering in place. And they're still going to have a problem with parents coming out. So.
Parents have to understand they are breaking the law or something.
When you have children, there's a child.
I mean, you just have to do.
Information or assistance. She is proactive in that way. The principal has said she is, like, discussed, getting help from the police regarding that, the topic of evacuation, and she's proactive about reaching out to the resources that she thinks she needs. And so, that's good.
Has she, as of today, reached out to the police?
I know she.
Your words.
David, can you confirm? But,
Police.
Darn it.
Does that happen, or is that?
It's okay. I'm almost positive that she has reached out to the police. I know we talked when we met 2 or 3 years ago. The police were in the room. Gancas was in the room with us, and he's aware that of her desire to have police support, all to three officers for evacuation purposes for the school.
And what has she heard back?
Huh?
And what has she heard back from
the police? So this is why I wanted to have this conversation in September, because I haven't yet to have a chance to meet up with her. School just started, and so the PTA is just starting to get all of their activities going. There's a school, as I was saying before, there is a work party this weekend for the PTA is leading, and they're going to be addressing the vegetation around the school. And they will be addressing, other cleanup activities like within classrooms, outside classrooms. So the PTA is in the process of supporting the school in terms of vegetation management and fire safety, as well as aiding the teachers in whatever support they need for the beginning of the school year. So once I have an opportunity to actually get in there, because I have my own tasks to do for the school, then I'll be able to offer more information from the school. And then maybe I can get a sense of how we can help if they want help, how can we help if it's possible? I mean, it just depends. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
And so, remember, Rodney was also saying he felt that a lot of this was not really on us, and that we were, and we didn't, in fact, have the authority of act on a lot of these things. That it was the authority is that of the school board, and they're the ones, and they're, it's their duty. Taken care of. So has anything from the school board or
the district has been very open and responsive in terms of clearing vegetation, especially after they were cited, like all of us, well, not all of us, I was, by our fire district for, you know, vegetation that we had to clean up. So I think that the consistent, you know, citations to the school are a huge way to make sure, to guarantee the investment in the district to take care of the school in terms of vegetation management and fire safety overall. In my mind, one of the biggest things that needs to happen is a push to get the fire, these fire sprinklers in the school. And that is something that, you know, that may have to be an appeal directly to the district by a bunch of angry community members. That would be great. Not angry, but I don't know. But that is a topic I think is just as important, because you want safety from within as well as around. And considering that shelter in place is a potential option that the fire chief and marshal mentioned, they, I mean, sprinklers are absolutely necessary. So if they're, the PTA board decides to start a campaign along those lines, then I will definitely be bringing that to the EPC for community support, because that would be big. And that helps everybody. Having a safe space at the school in the event of a wildfire is what place it's a temporary refuge area, which were prolific in, not prolific, but they were everywhere in the Paradise fire, and they contributed to saving a lot of lives.
Well, then they're going to have to do studies on that too, because if those kids are locked inside that brick building with a wildfire raging around, what's the internal temperature of that building going to be? And they're going to, and then someone said, oh, we'll have sprinklers, we'll turn on sprinklers. Oh, it's great. Now you're going to roast them.
Yeah.
You know, what about the ventilation system? Where's it?
We've looked at that. There's improvements that need to happen. Maybe the district can help. I don't know. But on one hand, the parents want the district to step up too. Like, for instance, now with the new regulations for the 0 to 5, zone 0 coming down, now there's regulations that the school district has to actually act on. So that relieves some of the parent volunteers of the cost and, you know, maintenance of actually keeping the school safe, because now it's state mandated. So that was really helpful. Lori.
Excellent.
Oh.
Two questions. Is the school considering a forum of some sort so that the public can air their concerns? And my other question is, for your working meeting, which I know the public can't attend, how do we give you our ideas, like people that have been listening now and have things that they want to suggest?
Yeah, you guys need to share all of your concerns, and then I can bring them.
Before the September meeting, we write letters. Is that the best way to do it?
Okay, this meeting.
I guess I'm confused about meetings. I thought you guys were having a working meeting that was off the record, the way that you do the subcommittee meeting.
Oh, no, this was just an agenda item because of the desire of most members of the EPC meeting wanting to push this forward. So
that we will be able to make a comment in the next meeting.
Yes.
You know, this is part of my frustration that you can hear in my voice, I'm sure, is that, Danielle, there was supposed to be a meeting last October,
yeah,
a year ago, and it got canceled and never rescheduled. That's exactly what you're talking about, Lori.
Oh,
that's why you hear me talking such a pissed off tone.
So you're talking about the school meeting, right?
Forum.
Are you talking about
that? It was canceled.
The town hall, yeah.
The town hall.
Okay.
Why was that canceled? It was never shooting.
That meeting, the purpose of that meeting was to make sure that the district knew the community cared about the school during it for evacuation. And what came out, it was canceled at that time because that piece of closing the school during the highest, you know, hazard days, that came out of that. So now, yeah, maybe that we do need another one, and this all has to come from the school. Yeah, I mean, technically, we don't have the power. The EPC does not have the power to it, but I can I'm happy to bring those concerns to the principal and the PTA board. So that way, I liked the idea too. And especially if there's a desire for the EPC and the in as representatives of our community and public at large, to hear information on this topic, then I will bring that to the board.
And would and you said to have another one, and it wouldn't be having another one because we didn't have one.
Correct. It was scheduled. I mean.
Yeah, the other thing related to that, I think it's real important that I know personally, I am sick and tired of being told we don't have that the EPC or the board doesn't have authority over these certain issues. If you have to live under a rock or not have any kids or no kids to know that the school district has the final say. I don't need to hear this from the chief. That was so many times. It's sickening after a while. We know that. But they can go to the board meeting, not talk to somebody like me.
Yes.
A guy wearing oversized shorts. And they need a guy with scrambled eggs on his hat and go in there and talk to them and represent. We all know that it's a school district.
I mean, you deal with logistics and this kind of stuff. I mean, I guess it doesn't require a phased approach. I mean, I just.
So how I would approach the situation when we're talking about the school, right? Mm-hmm. See who is the most. Who has the authority, right, is what we're talking about.
The authority is so best talking to the authority.
So there's the authority, the board, the school district board that holds the authority. If you want their ear, besides just throwing complaints at them, because it sounds like you've been throwing at them for the last year nothing's happened,
right?
Maybe here's a problem we see, here's some option or solutions that we think you should consider. And then is there any resolution on this that we can see for the safety of the kids? And as an EPC, we can build those recommendations, right? And or at least solution-based thoughts that isn't just like, do something, because what it's gonna do is force them to just be like, that's not a problem, that's a hypothetical, I don't have to deal with right now, here are my priorities, right?
Who's gonna say that?
That's the district, that's any board, any place. They're gonna look at what their priorities are, and if it's a hypothetical, they're not going to look at it as strongly unless they have actionable stuff that they can work with, right? On some level. So if you want to help push the needle forward besides holding forum, which I think is a good idea because that builds consensus, mm-hmm. What can we do as people who have some knowledge on the preparedness side mm-hmm. to bring things to the table that might give them options? Like you're bringing up the sprinklers. Great idea. Yeah. Why don't they have sprinklers? Mm-hmm. What the heck? Yeah. How about, you know, reunification location for parents so they don't choke hold this area with cars?
How can we evacuate people on foot?
But then there's also, yeah, it would depend on the situation. If the fire's coming from the east or this, you know.
If they're mm-hmm. east.
Or I don't know, direction of the fire. There's so many things. So there's. You can only prepare so much, but having some kind of like conversation about what that looks like. And as far as mm-hmm. logistics, it also costs money. So mm-hmm. I always think mm-hmm. about money. And then we can also look at other places. When I say cost money, like my thoughts are like, how are we getting kids away from that location? That's a vehicle, that's a driver, that's mm-hmm. unless you're talking about on foot, that's still.
Or it has high risks.
So there's other things to explore, but it's like, yeah, if you want to have a sidebar conversation, I'm happy to like vet it out and then have something to bring to Danielle later.
That would be helpful because, I mean, if I can't come to the PTA with just an amorphous amount. Mm. Like,
I think we are.
I mean, we are. I mean, yes, but. I think the key that Laura said is actionable items. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big one. And
they will be somewhat hypothetical. I'd say I can get away with that.
On some, but those need to be analyzed. There's got to be historical information pulled. There's so many things to look at when you bring up a situation that requires researching and understanding, mm-hmm. right? There's also the technical experts who are saying something to mm-hmm. us, right?
Seems to me that we're not talking about the parents who are also very much, they should be very much involved. Yeah. And a lot of that expertise is among the parents, I'm sure. Not all the parents are from Kensington. I think are the majority from elsewhere even.
Yeah, there's a
But it seems to me that an important part of solving this problem is catalyzing the parents if they're not already on board.
Doing what?
And active, getting the parents active in solving this problem. Because, you know, it's their kids. Us sitting here and telling them what to do is perhaps not the most efficient way to solve the problem, but I imagine it would happen through the PTA.
The PTA definitely can support, but also the ultimate decision maker about passing things up through the district would be the principal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the principal actually does worry about these things mm-hmm. quite a bit and definitely ask the PTA for help.
But pressure from the parents is going to get things going. I think that's where things are really going to move.
Yeah, when the question is, who are they pressuring? Because if the PTA already wants to support the safety of the school and the principal doesn't, it's the district. And so you have town hall.
Yeah, so bring the pressure back here. But I think also having some more thoughts, because to be honest, if my kid was going to the school, I would say, I'm going to go get them. And that's ultimately what all the parents might end up saying. If we don't have anything in plan for them.
Then you're going to lose kids.
And they need to understand that. Yeah. And that's part of a...
Let's go back to that hypothetical condition you just mentioned. When would you go get them? What is the certainty? What would be your trigger point, if John likes to call it that, for going to get your kid versus leaving your child in somebody else's hands to do
so
whatever?
When I get my kid,
yeah,
I have to go early. Kid that I don't have.
Go up there when they tell you not to go up there because you're going to add to this ridiculous bad jam. That's the problem.
You're asking me as a person who is childless, but also. The other thing is, like, I couldn't tell you because I have different understanding of the situation than I think the public has, right? Where I know that it's going to create that bottleneck, and I didn't want to contribute to that. But I know damn well, sure, I would want to.
I would want to, too.
As a parent, I would want to, and also I am considering pulling my kid on days that maybe are not.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a gift.
That is what
and I think a lot of people will do that. I would, too, absolutely.
I mean, why did it had been an option, you spoke about this years ago, as a possible option that on a red flag day, but a high fire risk, mm-hmm. a high fire risk day. You know, and those only have it's only like 2-3 days max that we have that. Close the darn school. Well, you know why? Because it's about money.
That's already
anytime you get objections,
that's already
happening. Three objections are never true.
And it's not about money.
That's already happening.
And I talked about the safety plan, and in the safety plan on page 18 or
19. The state passed.
Let me finish. After that plan, in that plan, it says they have set aside 3 days, and they give the dates so that when they cancel school for this kind of reason, the school district gets reimbursed, and I think that all the money, they don't lose any money. That's just bullshit.
I'd like to sidebar this and make sure we get through this meeting. I'm happy to like have this conversation with you guys about ideas.
Well, she needs
I can be there.
That we could probably give to her as long as it's not like siloed or something. But like, I think maybe we can email or something else so that we can move forward on the rest of this.
Yeah, because I need to finish up we have one more to go. But Jim, I know you were.
I just want to point out that this is what I want to talk about at our next meeting. I've already thought about all these things you're talking about. I don't think that there's a perfect solution.
No.
But I do think that there are some solutions. But I'm not going to go into them right now. Believe me, I've thought about this a lot. Mm-hmm. You will get a list before the meeting showing all the concerns and the possible approach to solving some of the problems, but there are going to be, this is a huge issue, and it's going to be very difficult to solve to the satisfaction of everybody. But we can at least do something, and that's what I, don't worry, you'll get a full list at next meeting, and we'll go through it step by step.
Yes, also, I'm going to ask that if you guys have things to say about this topic, my PTA board meeting is next Tuesday, or is it the following Tuesday? And that will give me an opportunity to, if I can bring something to the PTA board, I will. Mm-hmm. My PTA board meeting is the 8th. So if you can give me these something, my PTA board meeting is the 8th, September 8th. So if you have, if you want to tell me something.
I'll give you a couple of comments.
Comment to me, ideally by that Saturday, the 5th. So that way I can on Sunday digest everything before I go to bed at 8 o'clock, because I have to get on the floor.
Okay. Does anybody question what I said written at the beginning of this meeting? Maybe I should have used different words, but that the safety of these kids in that school and the staff totaling something under just under 500 people in a very limited area with limited access, whether it's on foot or car or anything, is anything but maybe the most important event, right up there.
Yes.
One of the main
so we're talking about it.
Facing
send me the
I want to make sure that
where you're
somebody objects.
I only hear agreement with you.
Good.
I think you're okay. Okay, moving on. Five beta, my short little thing, and I do need this is fairly simple because. Discussion on the Zone Zero fire areas. Okay, I don't know if you guys saw. So you have two parts to this agenda item. One is the letter from the chief. The chief report was forwarded to everybody. It's not part of this agenda. Or maybe it's loaded now. I'm not sure. But basically, that's the report he's going to give to the board at the regular meeting in September. And then, but you also got that email forwarded, which talked about it. And is anyone awesomely versed on this topic?
I'm confused.
You're confused?
I know.
Yeah. What?
On Zone Zero.
On Zone Zero.
Well, I don't know about awesomely, but in what ways?
Well, I know that when I was reading through the new regulations, this 1 foot to 4 foot, you know, within Zone Zero was,
they call it nuanced, which I thought was an elegant way of saying it's confusing, but it's pretty straightforward, actually, and there are three diagrams that are in the packet. Mm-hmm. They will be issuing new guidelines. The Board of Health is going to have good guidelines. It should have those illustrations in it. But generally what it is that there's 5 feet of low combustibility, and then there is a variable distance that is non-combustible from the base of the building. It is always at least 1 foot. And it extends to 2 or 3 feet in front of windows and doors conditionally.
Okay.
So it follows the architecture of the building or the structure. Mm-hmm. And around decks, it's always 5 feet, not combustible.
Around the exits, 5 feet.
Yeah. So there are these sub conditions. So, and they will actually have a little diagram and a list of those sub zones that people are now starting to object to again. But again, it's been passed as it is, and it's just that variable little, you know, difference between the subzone that's non-combustible and what they call an ember resistant zone. So the whole thing is ember resistant, but only a part of it is non-combustible.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And
that applies to only the highest hazard areas.
Yeah,
the very highest hazard areas. But here in Kensington, or I say Kensington hasn't taken a position yet, but Lori has, which is that all of Kensington should at least try for a full 5 feet of non-combustible because of the closeness of our buildings, our topography, and of course the highest risk is the narrow evacuation areas. Getting it?
So I was going to talk to Johnny too. Johnny, I just was wondering, do you have something coming down the pipe for this? I mean, not that you're not already busy.
As far as the difference with the zone zero new stuff?
Yeah.
I have not, no. I haven't been able to wrap my head around this yet.
Okay, I mean, it's-
But, however, we do have the channels that we can push any kind of information out much easier now through Firewise, FireSafe, Kensington, and our existing channels. So if the department, I trying to wonder if the department wants to put something that's a little bit more digestible or is that on us to do?
Can I interrupt for just a second? I think Chief Sailors is planning a presentation for both El Cerrito and Kensington discussing the enforcement side of Zone Zero, not the recommendations that you came to have it fully non-combustible. But we are, I actually did prepare some talking points for the community ambassadors that kind of goes through what the essential issues are mm-hmm. that I was going to push out yes. to the Firewise leads and to the community ambassadors. It, again, there's going to be official guidance issued by the Board of Forestry, and that will be the final word. And that comes maybe in September, as early as September, but definitely this fall. So I think Chief Sailors will give his presentation from his perspective. But again, it's going to be coming from a lot of different directions. So I think it's premature to issue anything to the public yet.
Got it.
Because until they actually... It goes up the chain and it's accepted as is. You might be putting out something that might change or be thrown back to the board. I doubt that it will. I mean, it's highly unlikely that.
I thought they, I mean.
The Forestry Department, Board of Forestry already sent something out, right?
And then, yeah, they sent their rulemaking recommendation, yeah. but it has to work its way up through legislative
change.
Oh,
okay,
I didn't
that's where.
Appreciate that
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
so that's coming like in September, October, we're all hoping, but again, then they'll issue their final guidance, which will be posted on the website, and we'll have all those diagrams and all the rules and everything that, from the Board of Forestry, which trickles down to everyone else. But Chief Sailors is already in the know about all this, and he probably knows that it's final, and he will give his presentation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that would be promoted through Johnny and the...
Okay. Any other questions? I do have one more question after that. Okay. Thoughts on approaching the district about making the recommendations for all the hazard areas in Kensington and not just the five fire hazards? Okay. Maybe
just
do you want that?
Well, a lot of the utilities are entirely lower Kensington near the mortuary and all that. So, I mean, if you look at the maps, lower Kensington is not a high fire zone.
Correct.
And yet there are, you know, these firebombs
yeah.
called eucalyptus trees right there. So I don't know how we deal with that. I'm going to make a comment about eucalyptus in the future
okay.
agenda.
Okay.
And certainly as far as whether we ought to look at all of Kensington as being high fire danger, fires really don't make much distinction.
Yeah.
And they move right through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I know. I just think of all those eucalyptus down the slope, and I think all of the blowback.
It could be going the other direction.
Yeah, I think it's very, I can hear all of the, I can hear Richard, so I know there's flow coming up to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know, I just wanted to throw that out as an idea of, because that would be a district ordinance. Because they said that once these guidelines get approved, then local districts can make more stricter ordinances if they want. But these are, you know, minimums, state minimums. So, I mean, it is something to consider approaching the district about. And if that is something that the EPC wants to frame and argue for, then I think we should consider doing that. And
So Berkeley already went through this process, right?
Yeah.
And what has their reaction to those ordinances have been? Have they been accepted?
Very much.
No.
It's very, there's, it's split. And there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of people.
Contention might have come from like an immediate switchover instead of a phased action like it's suggesting.
Well, actually, a lot of the pushback is that they're, and they have, by the way, they have financing for people who can't afford to do this work, because that's a huge piece of it. The idea of having to hardscape or remove plants and not have money or hazardous vegetation grants that are specifically for that purpose, it can be overwhelming for a lot of the more vulnerable population in Kensington. We did apply for a grant through Fire Safe Kensington to address a small number of homes for just that purpose, but it's never going to be able to cover hardscaping costs or new fencing, the things that are going to be required in 3 years. But here's what I would say. My attitude, when I say I'm totally in favor of all of Kensington creating a non-combustible zone, I think that there's an element of education that will activate people, and we're a wealthy community who can make those changes if they accept that it's valuable. And I think that it's about getting that information out to people. There's a lot of really great scientific information available that supports the 0-5 non-combustible. And I think that we try that first before we maybe move to ordinances, because the problem with ordinances, of course, is that there's a huge pushback.
Yeah.
Also, real estate-wise, it starts to cost. It's a very complex issue.
Yeah, and there are a number of people on the program, a number of elderly people. They've been there, they've been in their homes, you know, they've raised their family. They're retired, they're very fixed income. And they're saying that if they're going to lose their home, they don't know what they're going to do or where they're going to go in their old age, because they don't, it's not that they don't want to spend money, they don't have the money to spend.
Yep.
They don't have any way to get that money. They can't go back out to work. And then talking about, on some places, like, you know, $100,000 easily.
Well, and there is
$10,000 per
day. $100,000 doesn't go that far.
And then the gates and the debts, all that's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're old, they're fragile people, and they're broke.
Well, there is a state.
They can lose a home because of that.
There is going to be a state grant for people who are in the very lowest income levels. But again, whether there'll be enough money or not.
Exactly.
But again, this is all.
And they tend to look at the zip code, which is a big problem.
Yeah, they this one won't, but it's going to be a problem.
Well, and so then what can the district do? The district can maybe advocate for those grants coming to Kensington. I mean, what can the EPC recommend to the district in order to facilitate support for people who aren't, first of all, the people who are already in the zone who don't have the means to pay for it? And so maybe that's something that we can start moving forward on, like, soon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I anticipated the state having grants for that, and that makes perfect sense. We should be ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe even having like a little grant aid help office or something.
So what you were proposing is, instead of the high-risk areas that have been identified, making it all of Kensington, right?
Or just the moderate, high, and very high.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which I don't even think covers all the eucalyptus down there, does it?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not in El Cerrito Creek, the very end near the.
A lot of the eucalyptus are outside all the zones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they've changed the map. But again, I think education goes a long way. And I think that Johnny has done a really great job mm-hmm. with organizing people. I think FireWise in Berkeley is also doing volunteer work, where they get together your volunteer crews that go and help out vulnerable populations. So there's a lot of options that are out there besides the ordinance approach. But I do think it should be, you know, on the table at some point if it doesn't move.
Okay, so is it worth bringing this discussion back for next month, or maybe we'll just wait until it gets
absolutely.
Except that really the question of whether to prioritize all of Kensington as opposed to the high hazard zones, that's kind of separate from the zone zero discussion. And perhaps we ought to think in terms, though, of prioritization in the sense that if you stop the fire at the top, with luck, it's not going to get down into the rest of the community. So it may be that you put hardest up there first.
Yeah.
But at least have strong education programs.
Mm-hmm. I am. Those embers, they go along. So
down to the mains.
Yeah. Okay, we are.
No, are you supposed to say anything else?
What?
For me. Oh, are you supposed to say anything else?
Okay.
Floor or something like
that? Oh, yes. Public comment on this agenda item?
I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the efforts that Jim has put into bringing the school issue, evaluation issue, whatever you want to call it, the whole school issue, to the forefront. He's constantly been doing that. He asked to have that thing put on the agenda. It wasn't. Why? I don't care. It was wrong in my mind. And now some work has been done on this road right behind us. They had this guy, Fernando is his name?
Yeah.
I think doing some work, and he wasn't acknowledged at all for that. If it just got done, that's great.
I
but
probably
it's
didn't acknowledge.
Jim's credit.
Yeah.
And I mean, he brings that up and he never hears anything back. You just find out it's been done, which is great. But he's been a spirit for that.
Yes, he is.
And we're not giving up.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Future agenda items?
Yeah, I already have my list. Oh, you wanted another one, or is it
going
to attach to something else?
I'll do it very quickly. There are at least 600 eucalyptus trees in Kensington. I passed out last meeting a photo of many of them, and I would just like to start a discussion about what we're going to do about eucalyptus trees. Fireshed Kensington is working on trying to raise some money. Hazardous vegetation grants are closed right now, but should be open. They're not really big enough to take care of eucalyptus, but it's an issue that we can't really ignore. So I would like to put it on the agenda, or I don't know how we deal with that. But.
Okay. For that topic, then, why don't you write to me a little sentence kind of describing the, essentially the way I've always prepared agenda topics is I'll write something out, and then if there's some figures or some photos that can be inserted into the agenda, then that can.
Okay, so yeah. I sent those photos last time, and you guys copied them and passed them out, but I'll send it to you again. That public comment at Kensington Fire.
Yeah,
forward.
And also you got to CC me too, so I make sure I can get this into the agenda, because otherwise.
I'll get your email address.
You can either use my personal email,
Diego. Just as a reminder, the last board meeting, the monthly Kensington Directors Board meeting, they approved for me to develop a eucalyptus awareness program, which general manager said they'll be, I guess, discussing allocation of funds later in this fiscal period, in like the April, March timeframe. So this is kind of in development.
Oh, sorry. I thought you knew that.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know about that decision.
Oh,
so.
Thank you, Johnny.
But I'll get your email and then we'll help them.
Yeah, and also CC Johnny too.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Johnny, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. All right. I'm going to close the meeting at 6 p.m. and pleasure.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Linnell, for sticking out. Thank you. This was, oh my God. Thank you.